The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is 10 o'clock here in the Big D, Dallas, Texas. It's Tuesday, September 13th. This is Change Matters Solutions, and this is Kenny Hendricks.
And good morning, good morning, good sunny Southern California, cloudy morning. It's 8 a.m. here on the West Coast, and thank you for joining us. I am Colette Williams. We also have our regular contributor on with us, Renee Cole, and we also have a guest with us. So we've got a very, very exciting morning for all of you, and I hope that you join us. We've got a number that you can call in on. Ken, can you give us those numbers before I introduce our guests?
Yeah, those numbers for the call-in are area code 704-951-5030 if you want to call in and join us for this conversation. If you just want to dial in and listen, you can call 641-715-3660. That is a conference line, and you'll have to dial the participant code of 549-032. And as you're listening, if you decide you want to chime in on the conversation, just hit star 61.
Great, great. Well, again, we've got Renee Cole, who is our show contributor, on with us this morning. And we have a special guest, Mr. Gary Moody, who is with us. He is the president of the Pasadena-Altadena branch of the NAACP. So we do have a lively show planned for everyone this morning. And please call in. Join us with your comments, with things that you want to hear on the show. Just chime in on the dialogue. We are glad to have you. And without further ado, let's get started. We've got a lot of exciting things going on here in this country with the election. Poor Hillary. I wish that she had not had the episode that she had, and I certainly hope they don't take the lowest road that they can find, that is the GOP, of course, and begin to criticize her for the episode that she had. But even beyond that, I understand that there was a poll taken. Have any of you heard about the poll that was taken about black people and how white folks see black people? There were three questions. One was, are white people smarter than black people? That was one of them. How absolutely absurd. And before you can even think, how could that question be presented to the masses? Are white people smarter than black people? Well, the answer is absolutely no, not never. So where are we going with this? What are we doing, and where are we going? Go ahead, Ken.
Well, you know, people are trying to stoke a lot of things, you know, right now. And the right wing is really trying to stoke their people. You know, they've taken this what Hillary said over the weekend about half of Trump's people being in a basket supporters of deplorables. And what gets me is that Trump has insulted pretty much every demographic except for working class whites in his campaign. And she says this one thing, and the entire world has turned upside down.
Yeah, you know. And he made the comment that she's talking about everyone in the world, everyone, and she's putting everybody in the basket. He has said some absolutely incredulous things. He has said some of the most ridiculous things, and they want to talk about what she said as if it were that bad. First of all, it's true. Second of all, how in the world could they think that this comment that she made is so absolutely wrong, off-colored, insensitive, and he has made comments about everybody walking, talking, and breathing. So not only is it not fair, but it also demonstrates the kind of insensitivity that the right wing feels for everybody. He can say whatever he wants to say, but she cannot.
It's like the right wing, all those folks like to say people on the left are always offended by everything. Why are you guys offended by everything? You're offended, you know, who am I going to offend today? Because people are so sensitive. People are too sensitive, they say. But if you call them a racist or a xenophobe or misogynist or something, they blow a gasket. You know, so it's kind of a double standard.
It is a double standard, and we know that going in. And one of the things that we want people to understand is that this is a most contentious race. I think in our lifetime, I don't think I've seen anything as contentious as this. I don't think in the last one, I don't think the president had the insults that he now has. And I don't think that there were as many insults. But the other thing about that is that there were no candidates like this one. Nobody. Even Bubba is smarter than this one.
Well, they allow him to get away with things, and the pundits have said it. He's getting away with things that would torpedo any other campaign. Anyone else saying these things? And during the primaries, when Marco Rubio decided to come back at him, I was reading the accounts of it, and people were all over Rubio, and I sat there thinking, wait a minute. Trump is calling everybody all these names. He's not answering questions. He's being a big bully on the stage, and then Rubio tries to come back at him, and everybody's mad at Rubio. Not that I'm a Rubio fan, but it's been the same thing. So it's the same thing's happening with Clinton. And my contention is, and I said this during the primary, some of those other candidates should have gotten together and said, you know what? What we need to do is walk off this stage. They needed to get about four or five of them, six of them together, as many as they could, and said, at the beginning of this debate, they need to say, this man is ruining, he's making a mockery of the political process. He's making a mockery of the Republican Party, and I will not stand on stage with this man. And they should have walked off. They should have walked off.
I agree with that. Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Call in from Dallas. Kenny, I agree with you, but it's amazing to me that for some reason people don't see that. I don't know if people don't think to do that, or they don't understand how powerful that is, or they don't want to make a statement. People are afraid these days. The reason I'm saying that is because, along with what both of you are talking about, and I don't want to change the subject, I just want to say this very quickly. At the University of Austin, this young white guy carried an assault rifle. He carried one of his automatic weapons on his side, and to go to class. And they had great protests down there because they didn't want guns on campus. So now they have people walking around campus with guns, these rifles that are three quarters the length of the person. Well, nobody's walking out of class. Nobody's walking off the campus, and I don't understand that. So it goes back to the same thing. They had a great big protest a couple of weeks ago, but then when the guy actually comes to school, people start coming to school with this stuff strapped on to them, you know, in a military style. People don't walk away. So I don't understand where we have gotten to in America, where we don't understand the power of walking away.
Right. I agree. And when you think about people not understanding the power of walking away, or the power of making a silent statement such as that, people just don't get it.
If I may.
Go ahead, Gary. Go ahead, Gary.
If we're looking at silent statements, we can really look at what I think is also equally important that has also been on the news, and that is when Colin Kaepernick decided that he wasn't going
absolute,
to
Absolutely.
Participate in the Star Spangled Banner, and he's got a lot of our athletes now that are taking one knee in support of his statements regarding how the flag does not represent justice for all.
Right.
And if
right.
we look at the fact that our country at this point right now is becoming very thin-skinned, and it always has been thin-skinned when you're dealing with the African-American public. You know, Donald Trump represents that conservative and that hypocritical view that is also part of what of our a lot of our whites have now taken hold of, and the fact that, you know, it, you talk about other cultures, you talk about our Hispanics and our Asians, but it's still about black and white in America.
Sure,
so the things
it
that
is.
We do, the thing,
it
you
is.
Know, and things you do and the things that we say, you know, speaks volumes. And what Colin Kaepernick has done is raised the issue of things that are coming out, especially those things that are coming out in our election. You know, Donald
right.
Trump reminds me of a radical Barry Goldwater. I remember when I was
yes.
in high school.
So oh, yes. Yeah.
You know? The first time I got an opportunity to hear about the political process, you know, and understand that there are those races out there that are have taken hold of our community and caused a lot of problems based upon who it is that we should support, and also it brings out the whole idea of how racism is still strong. Barry Goldwater, 2016, yeah. Donald Trump, okay?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And Gary, thank you for chiming in. We were not leaving you out. I was going to ask a question, and that question to you is, how do you think or what is going on with the NAACP as it relates to the election, and what is the thought? What's the temperature? What's the barometer when it comes to
well, you know
the election and the two candidates?
Yeah. You know, that's interesting that you talk about the NAACP in this mix. And it's also interesting to find that we still are reacting to certain situations. In Pasadena, we try to be more proactive in regards to the politics and the issues concerning our community. On a nationwide platform, you know, our NAACP somehow has seemed to be caught up in the background, not in the front ground, not in the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that our president and CEO, Cornell, what he has been dealing with primarily has been things involving violence in our community, things that have been happening in regards to police officer-involved shootings. But, you know, it's been somewhat distracting for our people to know and understand that what we should continually fight for is economic justice as well as social justice. And when we look at the fact that the NAACP has been at the forefront for over 106 years, sometimes you find our young folks look at the NAACP as an old guard, not relative to what's going on these days. But
right.
one of the things that we're hoping to do and what we're continually fighting for is to make sure that the community understands that the NAACP is relevant to all, those millennials as well as those baby boomers in which we are now finding ourselves as the senior citizens in our community. So what we're about these days is my mantra in Pasadena, this is not your mama's NAACP.
And I was going to ask about that, Gary. I've heard some of the younger folks, you know, the millennials talk about, you know, whether it's the Black Lives Matter movement or some of the other things going on out there, and that they don't really seem to, what's the word I'm looking for, really want the older guard, as you call it, to
right.
be involved. And they said that's the old guard. They don't want Sharpton to be involved. They don't want Jackson to be involved.
Right.
And or they don't want the NAACP to be involved. So my question to you would be, and this may be at an entirely a national level, is the NAACP doing anything to kind of reach out to these millennials and say, hey, you know, again, like you said, this is not your grandfather's NAACP. Are you guys doing anything to try to reach these millennials so that they can get on board and get the older people on board to show them, basically show them some ropes and say, hey, here's what we've done and here's how we can help you with what you're trying to do?
Yeah. Well, Black Lives Matter kind of reminds me of beginnings of the Black Panther Party movement, and Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, you know, those organizations that were our college representatives.
Yep. Yes.
SNCC. You know, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, cool. We had a very important issue in Pasadena regarding the murder of a young man, Kendrick McDade, who was murdered at the hands of our Pasadena police officers. Young lady came forth. Her name is Jasmine Abdullah, who consistently railed our city council and railed on our police department, asked for the firing of our police chief. The key was that as she was coming to the podium, as she was, you know, creating, you know, issues based upon this killing, the key was that we tried to reach out to her, but unfortunately, you know, she felt that she could do well without us. Now, we also find out that Ms. Abdullah from our Cal State LA University here in Los Angeles, you know, they're involved in a lot of situations. Maybe you confronted Hillary Clinton. But one of the things that we had that a lot of our young folks don't have, they don't have a sustained direction, you know.
Absolutely.
And Black Lives, you know, Black Lives Matter is a great movement, and I see it possibly evolving to where it can be effective, more so effective and beneficial for all. But we find our young folks these days, their sustainability is short. Their attention span is short.
You can't
go to two or three paragraphs. After you get past the first paragraph, they usually get lost and say, well, you know, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
Unfortunately, you know, if they continue without the direction and support, not knowing and understanding the validity of a Jesse Jackson or a Danny Bakewell or an NAACP, mm-hmm. you know, they'll find themselves going in circles. You know, one thing I know about our people of privilege, you know, what they do is they just wait. They wait on the sidelines to see how much how far we're going to go. And then when we stop and find ourselves fighting a chaotic mess amongst ourselves, that's when they jump in and take over. And that's
Absolutely.
Why we have a person like Donald Trump that's now, you know, mainstreaming his ignorance, you know, unfortunately.
Right.
And hopefully our young folks can take a hold to some of the rhetoric that he has and put it into perspective so that all of us can understand, knowing that at 18 years old, you're able to vote, you know. So hopefully we can get those young folks between 18 and 35 to know and understand that they're part of the process too, but they're not going to do it without some wisdom.
Right. That's absolutely right. And I'm glad you made that comment, because that's one of the things that Ken and I talk about daily, the unsustainable direction. And it takes me back to the day that David Brown, the police chief in Dallas DPD, when he presented the question to the woman that was representing Black Lives Matter, he posed that question, look, I've got jobs. Why don't you guys come off of the protest line and come and apply for these jobs? I've got jobs. I will hire people who can work in the community. And she quickly said, no, that won't work. And since then, I haven't heard, I haven't read, I haven't seen, no one has said, I haven't seen anything that has happened with regard to Black Lives Matter people going in jobs or anything else.
Well,
so,
the DPD did put out their rate of applications, and Renee, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was up like 500%.
Yeah, it was.
It was up huge, but they did not give out the demographic of who was actually applying. Were they more Black people who decided, I want to do this, get them out of the community, or were they non-people of color and saying, I want to help shoot more of these people? Being a little
facetious. Well, see, the other thing, too, is that, and both of those things matter, but I think one of the things that, and we've talked about it probably every week on the show, is that you know, the police department, see, as we've talked about so many times, we need to police our own departments. Joining the police force generally is not going to work. And the reason
no,
I say
not anymore.
Speaking is because we know that even the FBI has plenty of KKK members. Just like the people in New York, those brothers and sisters that came out in New York and started talking about how they have been targeted, those officers, because they've been told that they need to to target the black community. Their focus is the black community, take those people to jail. Well, that's all over the country, and we know that. So when black people get on the force, or people get on the force and they don't want to participate in that, then they lose their jobs, or they're targeted for, you know, they don't get raises, they all kinds of things happen. So not only that, Colette, but what's his name, Brown? He's leaving the force. He's retiring.
Yeah.
So why is he retiring at a time like this? I believe it's because his hands are tied behind his back. There's only so much he can do. Go on.
I would argue that we know that now,
right?
Because there are more black people on police forces, and we are getting this information. And I would argue that not having anyone of any color on the police, these police forces, I think the problems would probably increase exponentially. I think it can provide some bit of a buffer. We do know that a lot of the police get indoctrinated into the system, and you're absolutely right when they try to fight. It's not a new system. It's an ancient system that was built, you know, as we've talked about, to catch runaway slaves. So it's going to take time and effort. It's not going to happen overnight. Nobody's going to get on the police force today and make changes that are going to take place next year. It's going to take time and effort, and it's a global thing that has to happen. There's some things that we need to do in our community. There are a lot of things that are going to happen, and I think it's not a panacea. It is no way, shape, or form panacea. But I think part of the solution is to begin to, for lack of a better term, infiltrate, if you will, some of these organizations. At least we've got some information coming out. We've got some people there. I know that there are some black law enforcement officers who do right by the community. And so I think we need those as well. And it's just going to take time for that sort of those sorts of efforts to really begin to manifest themselves as positives in our community. And again, there's a lot that we have to do in our community. I think we need to make sure that, you know, right now, running from the police if you're black has become a death sentence.
Right.
You know.
Right.
May I offer something in the interest of unity in the community? This is Scotty. I'm the technical engineer, and sometimes they allow me to chime in for those who don't know.
You're always welcome, Scotty.
I want to offer something in the interest of unity. I've been working with members of the Black Lives Matter movement from the beginning, since Ferguson. I've been working with them. They've been guests on this station and interviewed them. And I have to say, we have to be careful. Now, I'm not a millennial. I'll be 50 years old this year.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It's rare. You know, they say that it's rare that, you know, young black men get to live to be this old in this country.
Right, that's true.
But yeah. So thank you for that. But I think what I'm just going to be blunt. What I'm hearing is a lot of generalizations of Black Lives Matter. Nakivi Levy Pounds is someone who I have worked with in the past. She is the head of the NAACP, and I think that's in Minneapolis. Yeah, in Minneapolis. And her branch of the NAACP has been working hand in hand with Black Lives Matter organizations.
That's right.
Also, we have behind the scenes what a lot that you're not going to get from corporate media is that there are elders behind the scenes that's talking to these young people and guiding them. You've had people from, I can't think of the name of the organization, but it is a black organization, and they're socialists, which I don't really buy into these labels of socialism, capitalism, and all of that. Okay, but they do have the black community at heart. They've been talking to them. Cynthia McKinney, the former congressman, has been helping them. Rosa Clemente, The former vice president, she ran on the Green Party ticket with Cynthia McKinney as her vice president. She's been a longtime activist in New York. She's a Puerto Rican. And so you're not going to get a lot of this information tuning in to the corporate media. But if you listen to Black Talk Radio and other alternative media outlets, you will learn a lot more about Black Lives Matter than what you're getting from the mainstream. Let's not also forget they were instrumental in getting that Chicago prosecutor who sat on the Laquan McDonald case for over a year. They were instrumental in getting her voted out of office. They were instrumental in getting the prosecutor in the Tamir Rice case kicked out of office through the vote. So I'm just saying, in the interest of, because I know some of them do listen to this station, so in the interest of unity, I don't think it's helpful for us to engage in generalizations and say that, you know, because they're young, they don't know anything, and nobody said that on this program. I'm just speaking of things I've heard about them, you know. So you're saying in your local area in terms of those people not wanting to work with the NAACP. And let's not forget, Al Sharpton is not trusted in the Black community by many people. Neither is Jesse Jackson.
He's not trusted in the Black community. But that goes back to, we don't trust each other, period. And that's
us good reason not to trust him.
Yeah, okay. Hold on one second. I do need to say this. One of the problems in the Black community is that our leaders are pastors. That's a big problem. Okay, ministers and pastors. We need to have, as leaders, we need politicians as leaders. We need lawyers as leaders. We need, you know, PhDs who have studied in this country and abroad. Those are the types of people that we need to be leaders. We don't need pastors and we don't need ministers, because what their platform is generally not working for the Black community in itself. So go on what you had to say, but as far as ministers and pastors leading our community, that's one of the biggest problems we have.
I don't think that, and this is just me, my personal perspective on this, I don't think that Al Sharpton is stepping up, and I don't know. I don't think that he's stepping up, however.
He's not.
I'm going to be the leader.
You should have heard him yesterday, Colette. You should have heard him yesterday on his program, on his radio program. I was listening to his radio program, and I mean, I was just so disturbed by what I was hearing. So he said that any criticism of President Obama is rooted in Black self-hatred. And I just can't accept that. Now, does the man face obstacles that no president has ever faced before?
Yes,
absolutely. Were they booing him in NFL stadiums all across the nation during his 9/11 tribute because he's Black? Certainly, because of racism is why they was disrespecting him when they were supposed to be standing there quietly pledging allegiance and just listening to the commander in chief. But at the same time, we cannot hamstring ourselves and not critique him or the job that he's doing objectively. And when you dismiss criticism of him as simply being self-hate, you lose all credibility with me. And then after he got through saying that and they was going to break, he's promoting a concert of gangster rappers that rap about Black folks killing Black folks.
That's my point, in case if I may. Yeah. Now, first, let me disagree with Renee in regards to ministers and pastors. Ministers and pastors have been on the forefront of the civil rights movement since the days of Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad. But understandably, I understand that our churches and our ministers, you know, those that are touted, you know, it's like a reality show sometimes. But the key is, I think that it's important for the Black community to understand that the faith-based community is always going to be the foundation of what is a part of our civil rights movement. It's just
because that has always been. That has always been.
Let me finish. And I say now, you know, we find this a dearth of leadership. amongst our faith-based community, and you find people like Al Sharpton being touted as a person from the faith-based community and a leader, you know, but he's a media leader. He's been put out there by the media, supported by the media, and we can't take anything that Al Sharpton says more so seriously other than taking it with a can of salt, not a teaspoon. But understandably, we know and understand in our community, it takes everybody. Grassroots has been the key. It has been the forefront of our community. And a lot of times our politicians, just like some of our officers that are black, they get caught up in the culture of their politics. They get caught up in the culture of their officers and support of the blue and things of that nature. So it's important for us to understand, yes, we need to unify all the forefronts and put together a unified front to deal with this racism. Now, there is an order of the police that's black police officers across the nation. It's called NOBLE. It's National Order of Black Law Enforcement Officers. Uh-huh. And they are also those that have been sort of like slipped under the rug, knowing and understanding that there's racism amongst them, amongst the officers in the rank and file.
Yes, there is.
Yes,
so,
there is.
You know, we need to reach out to them as well, and they're looking at ways that they can get involved in the process. But I haven't seen anyone to date to really reach out to those groups, that group in particular, so we can get those to get our young folks to understand. Yeah, there is a culture in law enforcement. But at the same level, there are those in law enforcement that not only support the black community, but will activate if they're given an opportunity to do so.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is how I feel about it. Firstly, here in Dallas, there's a freeway. I think it's...
Renee, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We need to take our station ID break. Let me just give the telephone numbers out for the listeners who may want to join the conversation. We certainly would love to hear from you. There are two ways that you can get in on the conversation. The first way is 704-951-5030. That's our studio line. Or you can use the conference line, which is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. And anytime you want to comment from the conference line, just hit *6 and 1. I am monitoring all lines, so please, if you have something you would like to add to this Libby conversation, please don't hesitate to give us a call. Ken, you want to take us to break?
Yeah, we're going to take a short break right now, and we will be back right after a couple of minutes. And make sure you join us. Go ahead and call in. We'd love to hear from you if you have something to add. We'd love to hear from you. I want to thank our guest, Gary Moody, the president of the Pasadena, California. There is a Pasadena, Texas. I wanted to mention that. And he's going to be with us after that. Yeah, so please join us as we go to break.
Please join us.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Great.
You're listening to Change Matters Solutions on Black Talk Radio, hosted by Kenny Hendricks and Colette Williams.
Hi, we are back from that break. This is Change Matters. It is Tuesday, September 13th. I'm here in Big D, Dallas, Texas. We are happy continuing our conversation, and we have a special guest, Mr. Gary Moody, who is the president of the Pasadena, California chapter of the NAACP, and we're speaking right now on the election and issues surrounding the election and how we as a people can affect that and how it affects us. And I believe before we went to break, was it Gary who was talking?
Renee,
okay.
Yeah. Yes, okay. What I was saying is that we're talking about black pastors being the leaders, and I feel as though that is an issue. And the reason that I'm bringing that out is because in our community, in the nation, the black pastors have, some black pastors have power in the community. What black pastors have power in the nation? What black pastors are going to to Austin in Texas, or are going to in California, going to Sacramento, all the states, going to the capitals and lobbying and arguing and making these points? The pastors in our community that have power are the ones that belong to these mega churches, and they're not for us. They're for the almighty dollar. So what I'm Amen. Saying is that we have a lot of pastors in our community. We have a freeway here in Dallas. It's a little short freeway that runs through part of the black community down in Dallas, and it's South Dallas. It's called Wright. Yeah, I forget his initials, but it's the 175 freeway. This freeway
was named after C.F. Hahn. Renee, that's the C.F. Hahn freeway.
Okay, well there's one called Wright, and it's part of this 175. I don't know what's what. Okay, I've looked it up, but I'm not really sure. People from Dallas know, and they know the pastor. Well, he's not living anymore, but they knew of the pastor. This is the pastor that, when Martin Luther King came here in the 60s.
S.M. Wright.
S.M. Wright. That's who I'm talking about. S.M. Wright. Thank you. He went to the airport and told Martin Luther King, "We don't have a problem here with blacks and whites. You need to get on the airplane and leave." Martin Luther King did not stay here. He left. They named a freeway after him. Okay, that man had a lot of power in this community, in the Dallas black community, because he was a sellout. So this is what I'm saying. We have a lot of pastors who are sellouts for the dollar bill, just like these pastors are sellouts for Donald Trump. I'm not saying all pastors. Do not misunderstand me. I'm saying some. But what I'm saying is that the pastors in our community who are for the community, they do not have power to make great change outside of their the people that go to their church. So Amen. What I'm saying is that they need to step up to the plate, and they need to make changes within their churches.
They need to follow the lead of Reverend Barber here in North Carolina, who is the head of the North Carolina State NAACP, who I have been watching a number of years, and I absolutely support that man, because he is out there, I mean, in the dirt, in the grime, confronting them politicians up there in Raleigh, the capital of North Carolina. So I'm glad you said that, Renee, about it's not all the pastors, because I think he has set a good example.
Yes, he's always on MSNBC as well.
Yeah, and the problem is that there you just named one. See, that's what I'm saying. I'm not
right.
We could name you know, a handful here and a handful there.
They
get more money than anybody else black in the country. If black pastors would join hands and say, "We're not taking this money to white banks on Monday morning," they could break a whole lot of banks. A whole lot of things would change if the pastors did not take the money that they get on Sundays to the white banks that don't give us loans, that don't support us, that support against us in our own communities. You have banks in our communities that black folks go take their money to every day. They have it automatically going into it. They take it to the bank, so on and so forth. But we can't get loans, whether it's a business loan or a home loan or a car loan or whatever. Black folks have terrible credit in this country. And even when we have good credit, we still have problems getting loans. So
ours,
what I'm saying is
like
that
theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our pastors, the ones that care. And I'm not talking about care about the almighty dollar. The ones that care about the communities, we need to, and I'm getting ready to do that here in Dallas, is to meet with a committee of pastors. Because we have got to get them involved so that they can change from the grassroots. We've got to change people, and we've got to make change within our communities now, or we will not survive as a people, and that's a fact.
Right.
That's so we have to stop.
You make a good point too, Renee, because my disagreement was just based upon something that Scotty said, but on a level I do agree that a lot of our churches, you know, especially those that are mega churches, are self-serving. At the same level, and I also have to agree too that our church leaders are somewhat cyclical based upon who's the pastor of the moment.
Right.
Also, we look at the fact that's there's no national agenda for our faith-based communities to go and advocate and support our local and our national platforms. You know, my question is, where is the SCLC? What happened to the Southern Christian Leadership Group? I don't even know if they're still in existence.
But you know what?
Still in existence.
What's his name? Jackson. Jesse Jackson. He's another one who, you know, he wherever the media was, that there he was. Yeah, yeah, and now he's gone and sat somewhere and he's quiet, which is fine with me. But this is what I'm saying. These pastors that have these mega churches, including the big mega church here in Dallas, where are they now? Yeah, TD Jakes. Where are they right now that we have this with Colin
Kaepernick,
yeah, people like that are out here risking their careers, risking their lives. Yeah. Colin Kaepernick, that's a risk your life move, okay?
Go ahead.
What I'm saying is that these people are out here risking their lives. We have teenagers in high schools that are sitting down, they're down on their knees when they're playing the national anthem. Teenagers. Where is that guy you just said, the Potter House? Where is he? Where are these black pastors? Right. We have the one out of Oakland, California, here in Dallas, Friendship West, Freddie Haynes. Are these pastors right now? Mm-hmm. You need to show up, and you need to show out for our communities.
If
that kind of power would come together, do you understand the statement that would be made in this country? That's all we need is for these major pastors, the one over there on Crenshaw in L.A., Bishop Blake. Bishop Blake? You got all this expensive stuff going on in your church in terms of the structures of these buildings, and you have people starving and dying of disease and dying of drug addiction and all kinds of things right around on the steps of your churches.
Renee, we have a caller. We have a caller. But again, in the interest of unity in the community, you all, this last segment, you all just gave all the reasons why many of these young people don't trust the elders.
Now, That's right.
Exactly. We do understand. Let's go to the caller because
we got to work on that. We got to close the generation gap in the black community.
Absolutely, we have to close the gap. Otherwise, the gap is going to consume us. That's what this is all about. We have to close the gap. We're going to all fall in. Go ahead, caller.
Caller, area code 754. Thank you for calling in to Change Matters Solutions. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hey, how you guys doing? How you doing, Scotty? It's
Sam
from South Florida. I apologize for the noise on my work. But I was listening to the you guys' show, and Scotty, that the last thing which you said hit the nail on the head. You know, I guess I would be classified as a millennial. I'm 37. But I don't trust them. And I grew up going from Catholic churches. My mom bounced around trying to find herself. She was Catholic at one point. She was Seventh-day Adventist. She was Pentecostal. She was, you know, Baptist, Kojic, Church of God in Christ. This all kind of denominations. Even tried Islam. And it all came back to the same thing, you know. All the pastors, all the leaders of the churches, it's like they speak about the same thing. When I say they speak about the same thing, it's always we got to come together with the church and we got to help the children and we got to have a dance night for the praise dance and stuff like that. Nobody was talking about how are we gonna build our nation back up, or who is Nat Turner or Denmark Vesey, or you know. None of those things like that. So as I got older, I began to stray away from it, pull out from it. Once I started reading about who I am and where I come from as a black man and what I should be doing with myself and my family, I pulled out of it completely because I realized none of them, and my best friend right now, I have to say my best friend is a pastor. He's been a pastor, he's like 74, I think. Mr. Bowie is 74 years old, and he's been a pastor better part of 40, maybe almost 50 years or something like that. Me and him have, you know, we talk, we have exchanges, but I just, it's a deep distrust in the church. Even I speak to some of my Muslim brothers, it's a distrust that everything is focused on money. Everything is focused for money on for them, for or for that church, or for this group of churches in this section. You know what I mean? This region, and it's nothing never continuously about. Okay, we're not just gonna take a trip to Africa. We're gonna do like Professor Browder. We're gonna go to some of these archaeological sites that may go against what we've learned in the Bible. You know what I mean? Because that's what's right. And I speak to a lot of guys. I got a lot of friends. You know what I mean? I grew up in the dirt, grew up in the gutter. You know, I'm trying to work presently right now. I got my family and stuff like that. But all these people that I talk to, they have the same opinion. It's distrust. It feels slated. Feel like the board members of the church and the pastors, the deacons, the mothers, all of them have the same like agenda for the church and not for us, not for the people that's going to the church. You know what I mean? As far as spread out and building us. So I just wanted to call in, and you guys have an awesome show. I just wanted to call in and I guess and give my two cents.
No, we appreciate that. We appreciate that, brother.
I guess I'll bow out with that. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for your call, and we appreciate
Amen.
You.
Q&A queue is cleared.
Appreciate the fact that you're learning, and that even though you've got that mistrust of some folks, that you've got this best friend that's an older pastor. That's very good. And that's one of the points, and this may be the point that Colette was trying to make about what's happening in some of the churches, or in a lot of the churches, is that, you know, they may be preaching the gospel, but do they teach you how to clean up your credit? Do they teach you, how to get out there and fill out an application and get a good job? One of the things that we've done in the black community for decades is that we're waiting on permission. I hear black folks talk about our kids are not getting educated properly in school. Well, that's your fault, because you know what? You need to educate your kids at home, whether that's homeschooling or when they come home from public school. Make sure that they're learning the things that they need to learn about themselves and who we are. You can't wait on permission. And I've mentioned this before. I have friends on Facebook who will post something, like you'll see a group of 10 young black women graduating from West Point. And someone will say, you won't see this in the mainstream media. And I always say, why would we see that in the mainstream media? A, the mainstream media is not about about celebrating our successes in our community. That has nothing to do with them. Secondly, 10 black people graduating from West Point should not be newsworthy.
That should be normal.
Whether it's West Point, whether it's UCLA, Harvard, NYU, all these things. Now, in our community now, we need to continue to celebrate those things and put that stuff out there. But that needs to be out there. And the churches are not about anything else but preaching the gospel. Now, and I don't mean to be, this is not mean to be denigrating to any of the churches, but if the churches are where our, quote, leaders are, and those are the places where we gather and we congregate, they need to be, no one else is going to teach us these things. No one else is going to teach our children these things. And those are the places that these things need to happen.
Right. And, you know, and my comment is, Gary, hold on your thought for 1 second. But what I want to say is that, to your point, I go to a church in Los Angeles. I've been very laxed in my participation. However, when I see the things that have gone on as it relates to the community, West Angeles Church of God in Christ sits smack dab in the center of one of the most depressed areas in Los Angeles, and it is a mega church. It was just over $64 million to build that massive church. And it is a massive church. And it sits quiet unless the bishop and the first lady say that there will be an event there. They only use it for one reason. It's like the good car. It's like the good car. You don't want to put too many miles on it. So they use the North Campus for the daily processes of the church. But one of the things that churches or the pastors will do conveniently is they will continue on with this separation of church and state. And I have seen when the city of Los Angeles, when the mayor wanted to give the mega churches $25,000, they took it until the mayor said, it comes with stipulations. It comes with this. This is what I need you to do. And I do know that Blake gave the money back. That process of giving the money back, that was made public. But it was only after the mayor came in and said, this is what I need you to do. How and there's so many other things that go on within the Black community. I have asked the Blakes, I've asked their children to be a part of the education process. They are right down the street from Dorsey High School and Crenshaw High School. They are not there. They are not there. There have been many, many, many situations that have come up, and I have said we need to bring the churches in. They do not come. They do not come. They're not going to come, and they want to stay neutral, if you will, because they feel like, one, there's a separation of church and state. They won't come into the schools. They will only do when it comes time to bury somebody. If there's somebody to bury, they may have...
Well, that's because there's money to be made there. Okay. That's because
that's
there's
because
money to be made.
There's money to be made. And I'm telling you, when I see that it's all about money, and I've seen this for years because I've gone to these churches. I know the pastors. I know it's about the money. I sat in church when T.D. Jakes did his film. The filming was right there at West Angeles. So I have seen it, and Scotty, I've got to say, I'm not trying to create a division, and I'm not trying to insult anyone, but I'm telling you, just as we have all stated on this call, it's about the money. It's simply about the money. None of us can say it anymore. It's about the money. I don't hear Blake, I don't hear Jakes, I haven't heard anybody stand up, just like Renee said, and give the praise to Colin Kaepernick that he deserves. Kaepernick can run that ball, boy. As long as he's running that ball, then he's okay with the world. But when he exercises his right, then he's all kinds of things. He's all kinds of expletives. Again.
Here's a possible solution. Instead of infiltrating the police department and other political situations based upon Democrat or Republican, maybe we need to infiltrate the church. You know, we need to bring our activism to the church, stand up and protest the fact that you have a certain rhetoric that goes down in most churches based upon the fact that, you know, they're getting ready to raise Christ from the dead, and you get to a point of who will join and this, that, and the other. We need to stand up together, unified, and let our churches' leaders know that, hey, well, we're here to protest the fact that what's going on outside your doors is something that we need to participate. You know, and I think it's also important for our pastors to really understand the community that they serve is not just the community that comes and goes to their churches. You know, there's a lot more people, I think, that are out on the street that are not going to church that need to also be given an opportunity to participate. And the only people that I think at this point that can reach them faster than any political organization is our churches. So, you know, if you have a church home, and, you know, I do that as the president of the NAACP, I stand up and let my church know exactly what's going on in the community. And if they don't want to participate, they're part of the problem as well. How can you say that you're a Christian, and yet still you don't evangelize? How can you say that you're a faith-based leader, and you don't go out and activate? You know, so I think if we infiltrate our churches, you know, go inside and tell those T.D. Jakes's and those mega churches, Blake and Cecil and all of them. You know,
when it comes to health care.
Okay.
Gary,
and
I agree.
Will they throw us out of a church if we infiltrate? Will they kick us to the curb if we go to the church and protest? What?
I you know what? I agree with you. One of the things that I have a problem with, and this I'm sure this is going to really insult a lot of people, but I have a problem with when you look at the, you know, what the churches are teaching in the Black community. I always have to say I am not speaking categorically. I'm not talking about every church, but this is what I am talking about. Just like in South Carolina, when that vicious animal killed the 9 people after sitting for an hour and listening to them talk about God, and then he gets up and takes his rifle and kills everybody that he possibly could.
Yeah.
Immediately they were talking about, I forgive you. There was one young man, his mother got killed. He's talking with his coach. His coach is standing right by him, this old white man, and he's talking about, I forgive. Firstly, you're just a teenager. You don't even know what forgive means. You don't even
know what's going to happen to his life down the road.
But
so he has forgiven today. What about tomorrow?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. People tell these people what to say. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not talking about the adults. I'm talking about the children. We forgive. They all get together. That is one of the most heinous parts of slavery, is the Stockholm syndrome, is that you love your oppressor. When someone kills your mother, within hours you do not say I forgive you. That has there's no nothing logical about that. There's nothing human about that. There's nothing spiritual. There's nothing Christian. There's nothing about that that is right.
Renee, you are exactly right. But did you notice, do you notice in these instances, and you know, because I am a media watcher, I noticed that every time a heinous crime like that occurs and it's a white, you know, perpetrator and black victims, they always, the media, that's the one of the first things that they ask. Do you forgive them and all of that? So I agree with you. The pressure is put on them.
They don't ask why it's that. No. And because they're not going to, but it doesn't matter that much. And they mainstream, don't retaliate. What are you going to do? That's the next question. If you forgive, that means you're going to sit back. You're not going to do anything. You're not going to move. You're going to become stone. So what are you going to do? If you don't forgive, we're not sure what's going to happen. You might retaliate. So there's that fear. But if they come out and say, can you forgive this act? And if the answer is yes, then they're comfortable.
But they weren't even asking the folks. The folks just immediately came out, we forgive, we forgive, we forgive.
Let me tell you something that happened. There was something that happened, and I apologize for not having the details on it, that happened with a white church maybe about a year or two ago. And after that incident, white people with their guns went and stood sentry at these churches with their guns for days upon days. Okay,
yes.
Until things, I guess, calmed down.
Yeah.
We did not see that in the black community. Black folks should have taken up their arms and gone to all the churches around and for at least a week shown power, saying that we are not going to put up this with this mess.
Right.
There was a problem in our community. You know what that reminds me of?
It reminds me of the Deacons for Defense, okay? They were at the forefront of the civil rights movement, you know? So I also say that, you know, there are enough people in the church, you know, that can, at some point, you know, do just exactly what you say. On a defense mode, you know, sometimes you will have to take up the arms. I mean, you know, and to do whatever you can to not only support but defend your community, you know. And I don't think it's a sin to defend. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Everybody defends but us. That's because the slavery.
We're
see, that's
run,
the thing
okay?
about the black church. The black church teaches to turn the other cheek. I don't believe that. Okay.
You also have to consider that the Democratic Party, which most black people subscribe to, is anti-Second Amendment, anti-gun, and they want to take. But what he just said, after those churches were burning, after Dylann Roof, the monster, did what he did, and I saw these churches. I live next door to a church. I don't participate in organized religion anymore after about 30 years in it. But I started patrolling. I would stay up to all hours of the morning making sure didn't nobody burn down the church next door. Because I don't go there, those are still some of my relatives that go there. And that church has been in this community since I was a little boy. So But there was one black church I saw the news report, I think it was in Tennessee, where everybody the black pastor had posted sentries. People who had concealed and carry weapons were guarding that particular church. That's the only one I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody protects their people but us. Kenny, give the email address. Would you please give the email address for anyone who wants to email us in? Because I keep every week I call. I'm, you know, there's a call to action, and we're having these conversations
because of Paul and Katrina, we're having more conversations,
and people, please call in, but that's not enough. We need you to email in, and we need people to email in and give us your information so that we can send you electronic information and letters so that we can begin to jail. And we can begin to corral ourselves and come together and make a difference. So and close the gap in the community. So as long as we're having these conversations, this is good. This is a beginning. But we need to start, you know, making this jail. We need to start actually even ourselves calling people to action and being champions in terms of getting the, you know, the fire lit up under the community. Kenny, would you give the email address, please?
Yeah, that is changematters99@gmail.com. Again, changematters99@gmail.com.
Email us, please.
And we are going to wrap up. We are over the top of the hour. And what we'd like to do is go ahead and give our special guest, Gary Moody, a time to give us some last-minute words of wisdom. And again, we want to thank him for his participation and invite him back at another time. But again, we're coming to the end of the show, so I'm going to go ahead and, Gary, go ahead and give us some parting words, and we'll go from there.
Well, you know, one of the most important things and the best weapon that you can have is the pen. When you can write about it, you can say something about it. And in our country, one of the things that we also have is the power to vote. If you don't register to vote, which we need to do, get out and make sure we can get our young folks registered to vote, you can't say nothing about nothing if you haven't participated in the process. I don't care whether you're a preacher, a teacher, a policeman, an activist, Black Lives Matter, NAACP. If you don't utilize the power that God has given us based upon this country and God we trust, based upon the power to pen all the hundreds of thousands of lives have given up so that we have the power to vote. You're talking loud, but you're saying nothing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the other thing, too, I want to bring this out real quickly. I don't know if people are aware of it, but in this country, in South Africa, there are a lot of communities cropping up. There are even apps for your smartphone so white folks don't have to live around Black folks. And what Black people need to understand is that if we don't come together, we're a dead nation, Black folks, because white folks are banding together, okay? They're arming themselves, and they're banding together, and they're putting up all white communities all over this world, not just all over this country. They're taking South Africa, quote-unquote, back, okay? And in this country, they're talking about taking it back. Although they steal it from us and you know, people of color, but they claim they're taking it back. And when people steal from you, they're not bringing it back. Okay, so what we have to do is take what is ours. And what I'm saying is that we need to at this particular point in time, I think that Black folks need to say we need to get in our communities, whether we live there or not. We need to rebuild our own communities. We need to have our own schools. We need to start participating. And it needs to start with you.
And it needs to start right now. And we have come to the end of the show. I want to encourage everybody out there, all of our listeners, to listen to the podcast. Go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. I want to thank Scotty Reed for producing this show and having this entire network for us to give us this, have this forum to have this discussion. Thanks again to Gary Moody, our special guest, for joining us. And we're going to go ahead and sign off. This is Kenny Hendricks for Change Matters Solutions.
And I am Colette Williams for Change Matters, and thank you for joining us. We're going to continue this conversation. We'll be on next Tuesday at 8 a.m. West Coast time, 10 a.m. Central time, and 11 on the East Coast. So thank you, Gary, for joining us. Renee, we'll see you and talk to you on
Thanks,
next
Tuesday.
We've got a lot to talk about. Join us again. Thank you very much. Signing off.
Thank you.